If there is something like our debt to the devatas or debt to our ancestors, and there are some pious activities are recommended, so like say digging a well or something like that. So how should devotees see this? Yes, so Prabhupada in the Ishopanishad says that all kinds of isms, think about communism, capitalism, all these isms can be perfected if they are done for Krishna. So basically now, I said this was going to be the concluding part of my class, but let's bring it to this point here. She says, hey, as compared to Papa, Punya is, you could say, hundreds of times better. Why hundreds of times better? Like, even this example I gave of a family structure and of parenting and abortion and all that. So when I go to colleges in America and Canada and Western Australia also, when I talk with students, so many kids are from broken families. There was one boy, he was coming from, I was there at one place for almost 2 months, and this boy was coming for each program. And after coming for four or five programs, he started to be close to this. So he said, I grew up in a foster home. And I asked, oh, what happened? Did your parents pass away in an accident or what? He says, no, both my parents are alive. Really? Then why are you living in a foster home? He said, when I was 5, my parents separated. When they separated, both my parents told me that this marriage was the biggest mistake of my life. And you remind me of that mistake. Both the parents said, I don't want anything to do with you. Okay, horrifying it is, isn't it? You know, okay. Okay, but what is the child's mistake? You know, your parent made me a mistake, but why take it out of the child? So although he had both parents, he became a ward of the state. And he went to an orphanage for some time, but after that he was in foster home. So now, here you can say that, what is the level of irresponsibility over there? Okay, two people can't get along. Okay, sometimes it happens, what can be done? It's not good, but sometimes we should try to tolerate, but we can't. What to do? At one level, after marriage, say, the parents make children. But at another level, the children make parents. In the sense that children force people to become responsible. I can't just think about my pleasure and my indulgences. I think of the child. And they start taking care of the child. Now, everybody has a need to nurture. A need to nurture. And if somebody doesn't take care of that need to nurture, then they will find something else to nurture. So somehow in the Western world, feminism, if you want to say feminism in terms of women should be given equal opportunities to in their career and so that's fine. But sometimes feminism becomes very aggressive. So what happens? There is a trivialization of the maternal role. And then, so this abortion, it is quite clearly, it's if we look at it from scientific perspective, logical perspective, experiential perspective, it's the baby has life. But what some aggressive feminists say is that, now Prabhupada gave simple reason, if a man and woman come together without proper responsibility, and the woman becomes pregnant, and then she is stuck with the child. So she women need to be protected, and marriage is a structure where they are protected. So the women say that actually nature has been unfair to us. So their argument is, when I first read it, I was so shocked. It says, this is pregnancy is biological slavery. And abortion is technological liberation. So nature has been so unfair to us that nature has burdened us with pregnancy. Actually, bearing a new life is a special privilege. And that privilege nature gives to women. And it's such a deep-rooted need. But when that is completely distorted, society can collapse completely. So, in many traditional cultures, if a couple doesn't have a child, they feel unhappy and they try various means to have a child. There are so many kings who do various yajnas. Even Ramayana, there is Dashrata does various yajnas. So now, there are many women, they say, they don't like to say, I'm childless. They say, I'm child-free. Now, if somebody doesn't want to have children, that's okay. That's their choice. But to say, when you say it's a child free, then child is a burden. When we just let ourselves be completely governed by impulses, society will just not have its foundation at all. So the point I'm making here is, say, they're taking care of the family. It's a basic, it's the basic functional unit for society. And now even if your family members don't become devotees, but still taking that responsibility is very important. And getting out of ourselves by that, if one takes care of one's family responsibility, that is punya. If somebody thinks that is all that is there to dharma, then that's incomplete. But we can't minimize or trivialize that. Same way, if we live in a broader social circle, then the whole principle of yajna is that if we take something, we have to give something. So if we are taking something from society, it's our duty to give something to society. Just like, say, we take amenities from the government, then we give taxes to the government. So similarly, as far as charity is concerned, so sometimes if charity becomes a substitute for spirituality, or rather, social welfare becomes a substitute for spiritual welfare, then that is unhealthy. But it's not that always it has to be a competitor for that. Sometimes it can be. There's one disaster relief organization whose slogan is God, in double quotes, God sends disasters, we send relief. Such a horrible way of looking at things. It is not that God is sending disasters. It is. Now, why disasters happen, you can get into a lot of analysis about that. But the point is, God is not the cause of the suffering of the world. God is ultimately the cure of the suffering of the world. So, if somebody starts doing social welfare as a means of rejecting God, then that social welfare is unhealthy. So in India also there are some people who say Mano Seva Hi Madhav Seva. Now okay, it depends on in what context we are saying it. If we are saying that people are starving and you just go to the temple and worship the temple and not take care of people at all, well, that should not be done. In most Indian temples, wherever there is opulent worship of the deities, there is also abundant distribution of food. And anybody can come and take food in the Udupi temple, so many other temples. So we don't have to separate Madhav Seva and Madhav Seva like that. So in Madhav Seva is not just going to temple and doing worship. Madhav Seva is a holistic culture which also includes taking care of human beings. You see in the Govardhan Puja, when the puja is done for Govardhan, Krishna says, offer food to everyone. Offer food to not just cows but all living beings. Other animals also. And not just to Brahmanas, give dakshina and food, give to all people of all castes. So the point over there is that Madhav Seva is a whole culture which includes Manav Seva. But when Manav Seva is separated from Madhav Seva, says, you just do this, why do you need to do that? So some people, there was one person who was considered to be called a prominent spiritual teacher, he said, you Hindus, why do you worship? Why do you water Tulsi? What do you get by watering Tulsi? That all you want to spend time watering something, you water a brinjal tree. You'll get something to eat. Now this is completely utilitarian and there's no transcendental understanding that Tulsi Devi is a manifestation of the Supreme Goddess of Fortune. Worshipping her. Now how much water are you going to put in Tulsi? Is Tulsi a competitor to some edible food? Hardly. So when Manav Seva is positioned as a competitor to Madhav Seva, then what happens? People say, why are you spending so much money on this? Spend money on this. But Madhav Seva is inclusive and these things can also be done within it. So now with respect to charity or with respect to any kind of social activism, we could see, social welfare. See, as devotees, we all have certain drives which we get from the past. So some people might be, even before coming to bhakti, they might have a lot of zeal to do some kind of social welfare. Now if they have that zeal, it's not that in bhakti you have to give it up. You spiritualize it. If you like to distribute food, then let's see how you can offer food to Krishna and then distribute that food. If you like to help poor people, then see what could you do. Maybe you could have a you know, build some houses but have something spiritual in it. Maybe, so there are various ways in which devotees at an individual level, if that is what they are inspired to do, they can surely do that. Now Srila Prabhupada started ISKCON for a primary purpose, that is promoting Krishna consciousness. So the primary energies of the Krishna consciousness movement should be focused on the direct activities of promoting Krishna consciousness. But devotees who are inspired by the principle of Krishna consciousness, they can take that at an individual level, using their own inspiration, they can do other activities. So when we do such activities, there is a standard person of Krishna consciousness and there is an individual inspiration which we may have, which is broadly compatible with Krishna consciousness. So the individual inspiration that we may have, we could say that is like a preference. And say chanting Hare Krishna or worshipping the deities or having satsang, this is the principle. So preferences, if we have, there is no need to campaign for them that everybody should do it. And for somebody else who is, they don't need to campaign, don't do this. If you feel inspired, do that and do it in the Krishna consciously. So when preferences are made into principles, that becomes fanatical. So same way with respect to somebody who has been brought up in a very dharmic consciousness. And they would do some yajna or homa, or they would give some charity like that, say build a well or give some kind of charity. And just because they have to come to bhakti, they won't stop giving that charity. I mean, somebody did not have that consciousness before. Now, is it that by practicing bhakti, they will develop that consciousness? They may or they may not. Because each one of us has a particular kind of body and mind, and with the kind of body and mind we have, we will function accordingly. So somebody who has just come to bhakti and they are struggling, you know, chant so many rounds, come to these programs, and do this, and you tell them, you know, actually you do this charity also, you do this also, you do this also. Hey, this is too much for me. I can't do this. So there is no need to impose this, but there is no need to reject this also. So in general, as devotees, we should live at the level of punya. We don't want to do punya per se, we want to do bhakti. But apart from bhakti, means there are direct devotional activities, apart from the direct devotional activities, we should be living at a level of morality and we could say culture and values. So Prabhupada was asked, how do we know your followers? So Prabhupada could have said that they chant 16 rounds, they follow these four regs or whatever. But Prabhupada did not say that. What Prabhupada said was that my followers are perfect gentlemen. Perfect ladies and gentlemen. Now what does ladies and gentlemen mean? That means they behave in a way that is respectable, that is cultured. That is, that will be appreciated by people in society. Because people in general, they are not going to care how many rounds you chant. They are not going to care how much you fast. They are not going to care how much puja you do. They will see how you behave. How you behave and how you conduct yourself in your day-to-day world. So that's why that is important. We cannot trivialize that. So in general, devotees are recommended to live at the level of punya. It's not that we want to do punya, but punya means we can see the big picture and don't just live for our immediate pleasures. We see the big picture and we contribute to society, contribute to nation, we contribute to the family, contribute to the community. And ultimately, you will contribute to Krishna also. Does that answer your question?
Beautiful.
Any other questions about this? Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay.
I had a follow-up question.